A quick reminder that today's video podcast is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Underdog is the best place to play this best ball summer. All you do is draft. There's no waivers, there's no trades, no in-season management. You just draft your teams, get refined for your home redraft leagues, and collect your winnings at the end of the year. $2 million and $15 million in total prizes to the first place winner of Best Ball Mania 7. Definitely something we are max entering. We are very excited to get refined for our own home leagues, and we want you to join us. Using our promo code FSE at sign up and first deposit on Underdog and first play on Underdog, we'll get you our redraft rankings manifesto, our draft guide, and our dynasty draft guide for free. That's it. All you have to do is sign up, make a play on the site, and you will get both of our draft guides and our weekly rankings in season to help you with your start-sit decisions for free. Check that out if you guys are interested. Head to Underdog Fantasy and use the promo code FSE at sign up and first deposit. Last week, we went in depth on the running back position, and today we're going to break down our top 15 redraft wide receivers, Danny, going through, breaking down the cases, going in depth. On Wednesday, we're going to go through kind of like 16 through 36 or so. And today we're going to go through those first, you know, four or five tiers of guys, the guys that you're going to be anchoring your fantasy teams with, maybe as your wide receiver one, if you're going with a running back heavy build, or maybe you're going in the first round at some of these top guys. But let's get it rolling. Again, quick reminder, season pass is live right now. Redraft rankings up to date. Our best ball product you guys can go out and get. If you guys are drafting on Underdog, you get the overlay, you get the stacking stuff, you get the ownership tracker, the ADP tracker, all that stuff is available right now. But let's start it off with the top tier of wide receivers. It is a very clear big three for most people. Ja'Marr Chase, Puka Nacua, Jaxon Smith-Njigba at the top. We both have Ja'Marr Chase as our wide receiver ones. I'll let you take it away with why he's kind of above the other two for us.
Yeah, realistically, when you look at the projection of the Bengals, Mason actually posted some of these. Obviously, you're doing your own as well, which I'm sure you'll touch on. This is a team that's fifth in Vegas projection, over 25 projected points per game. When Burrow's healthy, we know we can project the offense out for 4,700 plus passing yards, 35 plus passing touchdowns. And Ja'Marr Chase has a claim to be the best receiver in the league. When you combine all these factors together, there's a reason why the last 2 years this guy's been a top three receiver. There's a reason why in 5 years he's been a top five receiver in four of them.
Yeah, and like you said, I'm doing my own projections right now. So far, through about half of the NFL, not one team has beaten the 4,939 passing touchdown projection I have for Joe Burrow and the Bengals passing offense. In Ja'Marr Chase's career, when he's healthy with Joe Burrow in the last three seasons, 21.5 points per game, wide receiver one overall during that stretch, 10.57 targets per game, 28.6% target share, 0.77 receiving touchdowns. Like, this is a guy that is a legitimate monster, and like you said, has a claim to be the best receiver in the league. And if I was starting a franchise, he would be my first pick as a receiver asset, even though he's 26 and some of the other guys are a little younger than him. You got this future Hall of Famer in the smack dab of his prime with a legitimate 5,000 passing projection on this offense. He would be my clear 103 behind the Jahmyr Gibbs, Bijan Robinson first two assets. Now, kind of sucks taking a receiver in the first round versus a running back in the first round this year, in my opinion. But when you're getting Ja'Marr, a legitimate needle moving 20 point per game receiver lock, then it's a little bit more stomachable for sure. Yeah.
I guess you mean also specifically at that area of the board, because I'm sure once we go through mock drafts, the top of the second round is where all the prime running backs are. And then I feel like once you get to like pick 20, pick 21, it's more of a projection. Are you in on a Breece Hall, or you in on, you know, maybe some of the riskier guys in that range? Because I would assume once you get to pick 20, you don't have access to Chase Brown, Derrick Henry, Amarin Hampton, Ken Walker, guys like that.
Yeah, not in sharper leagues. If you're in a more casual league, maybe you'd get a Chase Brown sliding to you at that point. But yeah, Ja'Marr Chase, hook, line, and sinker, wide receiver one for us. Puka Nacua, for me, I haven't done the Rams or the Seahawks projections yet, so we'll see what happens when I actually work through these two guys. But when you look at Puka Nacua's career, he's never not been a top five fantasy receiver. And last year, especially, except for that game in week six. And then, of course, he missed the game in London against Jacksonville. I mean, we're looking at a legitimate needle moving, game breaking wide receiver one who this year, nothing's changed. You still have Sean McVay. You still have Matthew Stafford. Davante Adams is still the receiver across from him. We know that this two tight end set Rams personnel is making, you know, mainstays across the NFL, is everybody copying Sean McVay. Puka Nacua is easily, in my opinion, the 104 in fantasy leagues. I think that, you know, one of my buddies who's in my home league said this pretty well. He's like, there's a very clear top four in fantasy this year. It's Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs, and it's Ja'Marr Chase, Puka Nacua. And I'll get to why I don't necessarily see JSN in the same tier as these guys. And I actually don't know if he's going to drop down a tier for me into the St. Brown Lamb territory once I do my Seahawks projections. But for me, the only concern I have for Puka Nacua is Matthew Stafford's health, realistically, and Puka Nacua's, you know, mental well-being as well.
So obviously we know in totality, 23.44 points per game, absolutely nails. Over a 30% target share, absolutely nails. Last 2 years, 3.78, 4.07 yards per out run, absolutely nails. Because that's exactly what Puka Nacua is. He is absolutely nails. But when you even look prior to the injury, man, like you were getting, what is that, five straight weeks of top six production, five straight weeks of over 22 points per game. Like, what are we talking about with Puka Nacua? He has the upside to lap the field at receiver. Before getting hurt, he was lapping the field at wide receiver. As impressive as JSN was, especially when you look at it in totality of the year, I could argue that if Puka Nacua never goes down, we could be talking about a 2019 McCaffrey. We could be talking about a 2020 Alvin Kamara. We could be talking about a 2007 Randy Moss, 2021 Cooper Kupp, 2020 Devontae Adams. Like, the point per game equity you were getting from Puka Nacua, he could have flirted with 27, 28 per game.
Well, it's exactly my bold prediction going into the season was Puka Nacua goes 2021 Cooper Kupp. That was my bold prediction about Puka Nacua going into the season. And I'm so glad, because it's true this year as well, that in the late first round, there was a right answer. And thankfully, my highest drafted player in all of the first round on Underdog last year was Puka Nacua. He was the guy you needed because Neighbors went down. Collins had a down season. Some of those other receivers going at the end of the first round, they couldn't hold a candle to what Puka Nacua did. And again, the only concern you can possibly have, just like kind of McCaffrey last season, was the injury to, like, the injury history of his quarterback and maybe the mental stuff. There's nothing on the field when Stafford and Puka are out there that scares you off of this player in any form or facet. And you can make the argument that he could be 101, 102 in full PPR receiver heavy formats, maybe three wide receiver, two flex full PPR type of leagues. You can get there on Puka Nacua as potentially in the same tier as those top two running backs.
So right fresh after the season started, actually, I believe when we did our way too early mock, I did take him at 101. And again, part of that is like we got more comfortability with the Bengals offense, especially Burrow's health. We got more comfortability with the workload splits with no Dave Montgomery, no Tyler Allgeier. But at the same time, there's a reason why there's a top four. I can argue Puka Nacua as the 101 because when we look at it per game, like I said, first five games last year, we were talking legendary type of ceiling. We were talking about almost 27 points per game, over a 35% target share. I love Devontae Adams, but what if he takes another step back? What if he goes from 800 yards, 14 touchdowns to he doesn't have that type of touchdown equity and he's maybe more of a 21% target share player? Puka Nacua could legitimately have a 30% target share and 15 touchdowns from the reigning MVP.
Yeah, not to mention if you don't go just the first five games as well, if you extend it out and just remove the Ravens game that he, like, obviously that was removed because he didn't play, but the game he left early in before, you're looking at a 24.7 point per game receiver. Like, again, yeah, legitimate, you know, Cooper Kupp type of production in his prime. So Puka Nacua, I don't think anything's going to change. They drafted another tight end. It's going to be just him and Devontae Adams out there, 85, 90% of the routes. They don't really have a third receiver that they're going to be working with. And like you said, if Adams isn't the dominant machine that he was in the red zone last year and Puka gets some of those touches in the red zone, it's curtains, man. It's curtains. He's going to have another season like this. And again, what else do we have to worry about except for his own health, his quarterback's health, and this off the field stuff? That's it. That's the only concern I have with him.
And you put it pretty easily. I love JSN. But realistically, with these top four players, with the two running backs and with Chase and with Puka Nacua, at the end of the day, if any of those four players can make a claim to you cannot win your fantasy league unless you have me, they have to be the clear top four. They have to be the consensus S tier.
Yeah, which is why, again, I don't have JSN in this tier. He does work his way into this tier consensus-wise for us, and maybe we're
I'll capitulate on the spot
here and moving JSN down. And here's the problem with JSN. JSN had everything go right for him last year. Everything. He had a 35.9% target share last season. That is insane. 3.71 yards per out run. That is insane. The Seattle Seahawks, philosophically, probably won't change much this year, right? They are one of the best three defenses in football. They just won the Super Bowl. But the Seattle Seahawks last season were a, what were they in total pass attempts? 29th in total pass attempts last season. Jaxon Smith and Jigba, I'm not going to sit here and say that Rashid Shaheed and Cooper Kupp and all these guys are going to take targets away from him because they're not going to. He's going to be clearly the alpha of the team still. But you're still clearly the alpha of the team with a 29 or a 30% target share versus a 35.9% target share.
So for reference, they are also the biggest or one of the biggest regression candidates in terms of points per game in the entire NFL. And obviously a couple of those factors play in. They were just at such an elite level last year. The efficiency was off the charts. He had Kubiak, you know, dialing up the plays. We look at the projection. So they were at 28.4 team points per game last year. And Vegas still has them projected for eighth. So it's not like we're saying, oh, they're going to fall off to the 15th best offense or the 18th best offense. They're ranked number eighth here. 28.4 to 24.88 projected points per game in 2026. That would be a 3.52 point per game drop off.
That's a big deal, man. And not only that, but like the Seattle Seahawks last season, they had two veteran running backs that were keeping the offense on schedule. And now you have a rookie running back who's going to lead the charge. We don't expect, based on what my conversation with Dr. James Ferretti, for Zach Charbonnet to be on the field until probably November, most likely. So is that going to hurt the offense? Is that not going to keep them on schedule? Does the, again, it could regress in the other direction. The defense, you know, loses some steam and they throw the ball a little bit more. I guess my thing is just philosophically, the Seahawks were a bottom five team in seconds per play, pace of play offense. They're not trying to throw the ball 600 plus times. They don't want Sam Darnold to try and win them games. They want their efficiency, the run game, and the defense to win them games, as they should. Mike McDonald is maybe the best defensive play caller in football.
And again, this is not to take anything away from JSN. He was arguably in real life the second best receiver, arguably in fantasy, a top tier receiver in fantasy. I'm not taking that away from him. But also, like, again, you paid Shaheed. Torrey Horton could be a little bit better this year, obviously going into year two. Cooper Kupp played extremely well in the Super Bowl. I mean, you guys know my thoughts on Mr. A.J. Barner. And obviously, I'm being a little facetious here because JSN
shaved 4-5% of that target share down just from a couple of those guys stepping up here and there. That's going to affect JSN in a major way. It's going to take him from a 21-point-per-game receiver, which, like I said, everything going right, all the big plays hitting, that kind of thing. Now he's a 19-point-per-game receiver, an 18.5-point-per-game receiver, which is not all that dissimilar from what I have projected for St. Brown and Lamb.
And full transparency, like when you're splitting hairs between the top of the line receivers, like you kind of have to poke holes. Obviously, JSN's a stud. If you take him in the mid first, you're probably taking a player that realistically, unless he gets hurt, is probably not going to miss. I would say with JSN, he's probably going to finish anywhere between like wide receiver 3 and wide receiver 5 this year. But can he truly test for wide receiver 1 knowing just how advantageous the situations of Chase and Puka Nacua are? That's where my question is.
Exactly, which is why I have Chase, Puka, and McCaffrey as a tier 3 to 5. And then I have JSN, St. Brown, Lamb as a tier of 6 to 8, because to me, they're a lot closer in projection. So anyways, we can move it on here. We have St. Brown and Lamb technically because our combined rankings have them this way. St. Brown, for me, came out higher in the projections than Lamb. And it's not necessarily anything to do with being anti-Lamb, anti or pro St. Brown.
Sure.
It honestly is just that the Lions projection is so extremely bullish for me because of their schedule, the indoor nature of their gameplay. Jameson Williams and Sam Laporta, obviously major target earners, but they also do open up things for St. Brown efficiency wise. And when you look at, you know, the best season of Lamb's career is better than the best season of St. Brown's career. That's undeniable. In the best case scenario, Lamb probably has the higher ceiling because I generally think he's a better receiver than Amon-Ra St. Brown. However, the consistency of the 18 plus points per game that St. Brown has given you in three straight seasons, the fact that the Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott has had some injury issues, which is a downside risk of CeeDee Lamb, and the fact that George Pickens now being there, in my opinion, does not allow for CeeDee Lamb to repeat his 2023 production, in my opinion. But I do think these guys are going to be neck and neck all season, back and forth. Who's better? Who's not better? If you have to take this decision, who is the better pick? You might not know from September to October to November to December. They might just back and forth. Yep. Either way, you're anchoring your receiver core with one of the best in the league.
Yeah, ultimately, I feel like both are worthy of top 8 overall picks. If you prefer the safer side with Amon-Ra St. Brown, I'm not going to fight you because realistically, you have, what is that, 4 straight years being a top 10 guy, 3 straight years being a top 5 guy, and unfortunately for CeeDee Lamb's perspective, his 2025 and his 2024 were marred by both injuries to him as well as injuries to Prescott, because we know what CeeDee Lamb working at his best looks like. In 2023, this guy literally paced fantasy football in points. As impressive as Ja'Marr Chase was in 2024, where he literally had 23.7 points per game, you can look back. CeeDee Lamb outscored him on the season. Last couple of years, obviously 2024, Dak suffers a season-ending hamstring injury. CeeDee Lamb also dealing with an AC joint sprain, gets shut down that stretch. Last year, we know, week three against Chicago Bears. I'm getting super excited for that game. First play, we try to give him an end around. He ends up freaking spraining his ankle, missing the next three games. And people will just look at the season in totality, and they'll be like, oh, George Pickens came in. CeeDee Lamb only 14 points per game. Therefore, George Pickens, big-time effect on CeeDee Lamb. That's what a lot of people are going to be saying this offseason. They're going to have CeeDee Lamb as their wide receiver seven. They're going to say you can't select them anywhere close to the top 15 because George Pickens is just as good of a bet a half round later. That is where I'll go back and say, did you guys watch how the offense operated when CeeDee Lamb was healthy? Like CeeDee Lamb, before the Cowboys legitimately got eliminated, if we just take the splits where he was on the field and we exclude the Chicago game and we exclude the games after Minnesota when the Cowboys were officially eliminated from contention, the only thing he was lacking St. Brown in was touchdowns. 0.3 touchdowns per game was a historical outlier for CeeDee Lamb. And that was also off the fact that, Corey, how many times were we watching Sunday slates, CeeDee Lamb wide open in the back of the end zone, he's dropping the pass. CeeDee Lamb wide open down the field, he's dropping the pass. I do think that the injury had an effect on the overall game that he was playing. But realistically, you look at the overall metrics. 27.2% target share with George Pickens on the field. 97.6 receiving yards per game. The guy was on pace for nearly a 1,700-yard year if you just took this sample and projected across 17 games. On top of that, we see the routes per game. We know the offense is going to be at 4,500 yards, 35 touchdowns if Dak's healthy. Realistically, when I'm looking at these two players, I view them relatively interchangeably, but if one of them is going to be the guy you need, I would prefer CeeDee Lamb. So ultimately, you want to take them 7th and 8th overall, sure, be my guest. You want to take St. Brown because he's been safer, sure, be my guest. But also the other factor here is that I'm taking the 31.7 while also acknowledging that J-Mo was a non-factor in the first half of the year and Sam Laporta didn't even play in the second half. So we could be talking about the only real difference there being the touchdowns.
Yeah, I guess my pushback to that would be without Montgomery, I think they will be a more pass-heavy team. Yeah, but again, pick your poison. You want the clear-cut, easy projection, St. Brown, better at playing through injuries than Lamb, has three double-digit touchdown seasons other than Lamb's one. Essentially, it's most of the time you've been better off taking St. Brown. Because Lamb has Pickens, I don't believe he has double-digit touchdown upside because Pickens is so good in the red zone, so good at the catch point, so good at jump balls. It's kind of like Puka and Adams to some degree, where it's like Adams is so good in that role that I do expect Puka to have a lower touchdown total than what Jamar would have on his upside scenario. So again, nitpicking some of the best receivers in the league because that's the decision on the clock, right? You guys picking 106, 107, 108 in your fantasy drafts, you got to decide.
And I would say the way I would describe the St. Brown versus Lamb decision would be on 50 to 80% of scenarios, if you want the safer projection for 18 points per game, take St. Brown. It's very clear the last few years he has been that projection. But if you want to be taking the guy who you think has top three overall fantasy upside, at the later portion of the first round.
Especially I think Pickens or Ferguson miss any time for sure.
Yeah, the implied perspective, if any of them miss time. The implied perspective, if CeeDee Lamb just frankly holds on to the football a couple more times. Like, what if Dak Prescott throws for 5,000 yards and 35 touchdowns? I think you can only make the case for two other quarterbacks of the receivers we mentioned, with Stafford and Burrow being at that level.
I don't have Goff that far off, to be honest with you.
I think
the Lions are just going to boat race a bunch of teams this year, and it's in a large part schedule related.
So initially in the offseason, I was like, oh, pick 7, pick 8, you kind of miss out on the top 4, but you also, it's a pretty flat tier. If you can get one of these two receivers, wrap back in the second, take any of those anchor running backs, to me, if you have pick 8 or later, that is the ideal start in your fantasy league.
Yeah, 109 through 112 to me are worse picks than the first 8. But I do structurally like the idea of getting two running backs, which is more 109 to 112 territory. So I actually don't like the answer to the question, what's the worst pick this year? To me is 109, 110, because 111, 112, you get to double tap running backs typically. Whereas in some leagues, if you take one running back at 109, you may be reaching up the board on like a James Cook or a Jonathan Taylor or Chase Brown. Whereas at the back half, you're maybe not getting in the second round, not the best player. But structurally, I don't love the idea of taking JSN, Lamb, and St. Brown in the first round just because you might miss out on some of those running back tiers and you have a worse wide receiver one than the Puka and Chase teams.
Yeah, which is reasonable. The way I kind of look at it right now is how I have these rankings is CeeDee Lamb, St. Brown, McCaffrey in that 6 through 8 range. If you compare them with Anybody like Saquon, Achan, Henry, Walker, Hampton, or above, I obviously like that. But given current ADP too, like you might be facing the decision of, do I take Drake London and have a wide receiver start, or do I try to push a running back up the board like Jeremiah Love? Like people are going to have that decision point.
All right. So we made that change officially on the fly. Let's move into the next tier where we have Justin Jefferson and Drake London. Now with both of these guys, the reason that they're not in the tier with St. Brown, Lamb, JSN, because they have the ability to be in that tier. Yep. There's no question about these guys being some of the better receivers in the league. The question for Justin Jefferson is the same question we had last year. Obviously it was a big problem that JJ McCarthy was the starting quarterback. Even when Carson Wentz was starting games, you saw that middle portion of like September to October where Jefferson started heating up a little bit. But then, you know, things start happening injury-wise. We had Max Brosmer games in there. Like it was a complete train wreck. Now, obviously, I'm not expecting 11.85 fantasy points per game from Justin Jefferson. He's definitely going to be better than that. But how much better? Is he capable of hitting his 20-point per game ceiling with Kyler Murray at quarterback? Because say what you want about, JJ McCarthy and stuff, but Kyler Murray has been partially due to, you know, blame for the Marvin Harrison lack of breakout. Like there's been a serious problem with Kyler Murray getting his number one receiver of the football in Arizona. Now, was that just a Harrison problem? Was that a change of environment problem? Is Kevin O'Connell going to make everything right? We have no questions about Justin Jefferson, the talent. The only question I have is about the offense and how it's going to operate with Addison, with Hawkinson, now Juwan Jennings coming in. Is Jefferson capable of being 2022 Justin Jefferson again?
So I'm going to have a little bit of a tangent here because ultimately I feel like people are very disingenuous to the splits with Justin Jefferson, with McCarthy versus any other quarterback. How many times have you seen that flown around this offseason? Guys, before 2023, he was catching passes from Kirk Cousins, who was a lock for 4,300 yards and 28 touchdowns every year. The 1 year without Kirk Cousins, who, by the way, obviously you infamously took Garrett Wilson over Justin Jefferson. What happened in that season that nobody saw coming?
Sam Darnold matched, if not exceeded, Kirk Cousins' production from the past.
They went 14-3 and were the eighth highest scoring team in the NFL. They averaged over 25 points per game. So people are like, oh, well, what's Kyler Murray closer to? Sam Darnold of 2024 or previous Kirk Cousins? That is not the conversation point here. The conversation point here is that when Justin Jefferson was doing that, it was a top 10 Vikings offense. You know where they currently rank in Vegas projection, Corey?
19?
21st in the league behind the Giants, the Colts, and like the Bucs, the Commanders, teams like that. So it's like, yeah, I will acknowledge that Justin Jefferson might be the best receiver in the league. I will acknowledge that Justin Jefferson will be a lot better than he was with JJ McCarthy. But people are just assuming he's going to be a 19, 20 plus point per game scorer because when he was producing with Sam Darnold and Kirk Cousins, that's what he was giving you. I think there's going to be some type of middle ground there.
The middle ground for me is actually kind of what he was with Wentz.
Yeah.
16.3 points per game, 30% target share, 10 targets a game. Didn't score a single touchdown, by the way, in any of those games. So maybe it's a little bit better. It's an 18.5 point per game receiver or whatever. Yeah. Jefferson's hard to figure out, man. I have him ranked in the early second round. And the reason for that, even though he doesn't go there, he's 9.7 ADP on Underdog. Remember, Underdog's a three wide receiver start format. Structurally, I like taking Jentie, Chase Brown, James Cook over Justin Jefferson because I think that the running back position is quite strong at the top this year and not very strong beyond the RB2s of the world. So for me, I'm going to probably be passing on Justin Jefferson because I do think that Kyler Murray is a lot closer to Carson Wentz as a passer than he is to Sam Darnold or Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, like when you're talking about those guys consistently giving you 4,500 yards, 28-plus passing touchdowns, each of those would be a career high for Kyler.
Yeah, I don't think Kyler Murray's recapturing his 2020 self. Now, I would love him to because I have dynasty shares of him and I'd like him to stay on the Vikings long term. And, you know, we overrated Kevin O'Connell's ability to turn any quarterback into gold last year. Kevin O'Connell is legitimately a top five candidate to be fired first right now, legitimately. Like, it sounds crazy that in one calendar season, we went from, oh my God, he turned Sam Darnold into a functional quarterback who just won the Super Bowl, to this guy could get fired if this doesn't work out with Kyler Murray.
And what was crazy about Sam Darnold, obviously going into 2024, nobody could have predicted it. But like now with hindsight bias that he is a Super Bowl champion, that the last 2 years have been very good, you can make the case that the flip really switched when he got that last game of the season against the 49ers, because I think he played really well in that game. They brought him in for insurance for J.J. McCarthy. J.J. McCarthy hurts his knee, and then obviously we know what happened in 2024. So maybe Sam Darnold, his train was really starting at the end of 2023.
Well, yeah, and Mac Jones is going to have the exact same career trajectory. He looks like Chris Ostreicher with his new haircut right now. So let's keep it rolling here.
My guy.
Drake London. Where, let me ask you really quick on Jefferson. Where is he ranked for you overall?
He's at 11th overall, but like you said, he's in the midst of the tier with like James Cook and Ashton Jeanty and Jonathan Taylor. Obviously, I have him ranked a little bit lower than people do. Like, that's where I have him ranked. But if you wanted to argue like, hey, I would take Chase Brown over him, Hampton over him, Walker over him, Henry over, like, I wouldn't go that far, but I would at least see that scenario out. He's 11 for me.
Achane, Barkley, and Chase Brown are the ones that are ranked over him for me that are like the non-consensus takes.
You want to hear my spicy take too? Because a lot of people are going to want to put Jefferson up there with St. Brown and Lamb. To me, he's far closer to Drake London. And that's why we're going to be talking about him right now. Drake London, we know what the situation is. Not great quarterback play, but we got an elite number one receiver. 30.4% target share. And this was the only guy that was pacing with Puka Nacua and Jaxon Smith-Njigba prior to getting hurt. Wide receiver one on the week, wide receiver one on the week, wide receiver 11 on the week, wide receiver five, wide receiver one. That sample size before he got hurt against Carolina, and then keep in mind, he was dealing with a knee sprain after that. I believe it was a
back injury early on in the season even too that he was playing through.
And again, I believe it was a grade two PCL or MCL sprain that kept him out that month, but clearly never recaptured that form. If we take those first 11 games, Corey, the guy was legitimately a 19 and a half point game type of wide receiver. So realistically, if we can get him back at 28%+ of the targets, I do believe a lot more in Tua Tagovailoa compared to what they had at quarterback last year between a one Achilles tendon type of Kirk Cousins and at this point, does Michael Penix have both of his ACLs intact?
I'm going to say something maybe really outlandish. I have more faith in Tua Tagovailoa just from the standpoint of getting the number one receiver, the football. I have more faith in Tua Tagovailoa than I have in Kyler Murray.
Yeah, I think that's valid.
The two quarterback situations. And I do have Tua Tagovailoa projected for 13 starts. So I do think he will be the predominant quarterback in Atlanta. This front office and coaching staff has absolutely zero commitment to Michael Penix. The only person with commitment to Michael Penix is the owner of the team.
So Drake London could very well be the wide receiver version of 2025 Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah.
Like, can we point that out?
I think he can actually, as crazy as it sounds, I think he can be the 2024 Justin Jefferson, where we're all questioning the quarterback, and Tua has like a pretty decent season for Atlanta, throws for, what do I have him projected for right now? I'm just curious. The pace of the Atlanta Falcons offense, keep in mind with Penix starting four of these games, who I think is an inferior quarterback to Tua Tagovailoa, 3,800 passing yards, 26 touchdowns is what I have the Falcons quarterbacks projected for, predominantly Tua Tagovailoa being a big part of that.
So when we just isolated out the games post-injury, Corey, this literally looks like the chart I was showing you when we talked about JSN and Puka. 32.8% target share, 2.89 yards per out run, nearly 33 routes per game. Like, we were talking about a possession receiver that was still at over 9 yards per target. We were talking about a guy that was at 90 receiving yards per game. Oh, by the way, 0.67 receiving touchdowns per game. It's probably going to continue at a 6'4", 210-pound frame. Like, Drake London has all the makings to have that truly monstrous 1,500-yard, 10-touchdown year. I have him ranked as my 13th overall player. I do think, obviously, in that range, I want to lead with one running back and one receiver. So if you don't get access to CeeDee Lamb or Amon-Ra St. Brown or Justin Jefferson, who probably should all be off the board by the 10th pick in most leagues, to me, if I can get Drake London plus any of those running back projections, I feel very good. Because like I mentioned to you off camera, Corey, I do think at the end of the board this year, a hero wide receiver is my ideal structure.
Yeah, I'm not really of the same opinion. I don't like taking Jefferson in London because I don't like what it does to me structurally.
Fair.
But at the same time, if I have Jefferson ranked at the 1-2 turn, like, I feel like London needs to be right there with him. And I can make the argument for London over Jefferson. I can do
11
it.
And 13 for me right now, respectively. And honestly, it's taking everything in me not to rank London higher, but I feel like I could call
bias. I'm either going to have to move London where Jefferson is, or I'm going to have to move both of them below Jeanty and Hampton and some of those guys. Like, I would not take Kenneth Walker or Derrick Henry over either of them. But I could take Jeanty and Hampton over both of them. And those guys, keep in mind, I already have Barkley and Achane and Chase Brown over them.
Yeah. So, like, realistically, you want elite wide receiver upside. I do think once London is off the board and you get to, like, the Nico Collins, the AJ Brown, guys like that. As much as I like their projections, London's the last of the receivers that I think has a legitimate path to being the wide receiver one overall.
Yeah. No, that's exactly how I feel about him too. By the way, too, like my Falcons projections, 68.5% of the targets going to London, Bijan, and Kyle Pitts, a very consolidated offense.
Yeah, which makes total sense. And people do forget that the reason why Pitts truly broke out down the stretch was when he was dealing with a knee sprain. So
exactly.
Yeah. Good. All right. AJ Brown, Nico Collins, Rashee Rice, and Devontae Smith. Let's kick it off. I just mentioned, a little bit of slander that I don't think any of these guys have the top three overall ceiling, but the closest to it would be the wide receiver one for Drake May, because who knows? Could AJ Brown pull off a 2007 Randy Moss? That would have to be the comp.
Yeah, and I think the challenging part for me about this tier is, like, for me, for example, I'm very much paying attention to this area of the board because I have the first pick in my home league. I'm going to be taking Jahmyr Gibbs. So I have to sort through if I take a receiver at the 2-3 turn or two receivers potentially at the 2-3 turn, which guy do I prefer to fall to me? Because I think that in most people's leagues, whoever's picking like the Bijan Gibbs, Jamar Chase of the world, this is going to be what you're looking at as some of the best players plus Brock Bowers most likely on the board. So for me, AJ Brown represents the best blend of ceiling and floor because I know AJ Brown in his career has been one of the best receivers in football, a top 13 receiver in five of his last six seasons. I don't read too much into the start of 2025 where up until like the Giants game, he was not a very good fantasy pick at all. Some people were talking about ranking him in the mid wide receiver three range and that kind of thing. Like, he really turned it on down the stretch. I do think he was mentally dejected away from the Philadelphia offense. And as I've brought up many times, AJ Brown has never, outside of one season, that first season in Philadelphia, been on a football team that has thrown the ball more than 550 pass attempts on a season. And I do think the New England Patriots will be the most pass-heavy team he has ever been on once I get to their projections. And that is a huge thing because he's the clear number one for a young, accurate, exciting quarterback who was second in MVP voting last year with DeMario Douglas, Kayshon Booty, and, you know, Stephon Diggs on one knee as his number one, two, and three receivers. Like, AJ Brown and Romeo Doubs both would have easily been wide receiver one on that team last year.
Yeah, I'm on the same page, and I'm actually going to get a split just to how dominant the Patriots offense was, because if you take a lot of the efficiency metrics, like, they were the best performing offense in the league. We'll talk about some of the cons because, of course, their schedule is a lot harder this year. Maybe, you know, year two of the May experience, like, teams are going to like figure out the offense a little more. Okay, this is what, look, maybe Drake struggles with. We saw, for example, that kind of happened in the playoffs. I'm not as concerned in that capacity because I think Drake May is the type of superstar quarterback that'll continue.
I think Josh McDaniels game, is smarter than that too.
That's a very good point too, because Josh McDaniels has proven time and time again in the Brady era, obviously first year with Drake May, like, he is a legitimate offense coordinator. Just don't trust him as your head coach. I'm looking at you, Raiders.
Yeah, and if I look at AJ Brown's splits week 6 to 18 last year, 17.6 fantasy points per game. You get this version of AJ Brown on a Philadelphia team that was, you know, struggling to throw the ball, didn't have their offensive line. Like, I think this is the baseline for what I would expect on a median for AJ Brown. If you're getting 17.5 points per game at the 2-3 turn, that is an incredibly good pick.
So overall, I do agree. Again, I think there are some question marks because, like I said, even though I am a lot higher on the Patriots offense, they are the number one biggest regression candidate, almost 6 points per game less by Vegas projections this year versus what they finished last year. Again, part of that is just they're going to have a tougher schedule. You're a first place team in the AFC East this year versus you had a fourth place schedule last year. And the other factor that I do have is I'm quickly going to share my screen to show, but you know what I'm going to show here, Corey. It's not great when you look at the reception perception and you see 54th percentile against man, 16th percentile against zone, 45th percentile against press. I don't think it's the end all be all because ultimately we're believing that in a better situation, a more motivated AJ Brown, he's going to be able to get back to that 2024, 2023 level. But I also think there is a risk here. It's not like he's 25 years old making this transition. He is 29 years old. There is an evident decline in terms of the separation. I do think the 2-3 turn is an acceptable price range. But if he starts going like 16th overall, 17th overall, 18th overall as the season starts, that's where I'll get a little bit more worried in the cost.
Yeah, I mean, I'm expecting very similar production to 2022, 2023. And the reason I see that is just because I think everything you said is true about the Patriots. However, do we project a year three quarterback to get worse when he's 23 years
I don't.
Old? Do we project Josh McDaniels to not know how to work with two way better receivers than what they had last year? They add Eli Raritan as a second tight end. Hunter Henry's still there. They have their other ancillary pieces still, like Kayshon Booty. And I think their run game can be quite good this year between Trevion Henderson and Ramondre Stevenson. Even if they like philosophically like regressed, I do actually think the additions they made help with that a lot, because you aren't rolling the exact same players out there, the exact same offense out there.
Yeah, and I guess this doesn't really relate to AJ Brown because he wasn't on the Patriots last year. But keep in mind, like, the Patriots were a near 29 point per game offense, and they're currently projected out as the number 17 scoring, 22.93 points per game.
I don't agree with that. They're going to end up.
I don't agree either.
Projections.
So I don't agree either. I personally would probably have them more in the fringe top 10 range, top 8 to 10 range. But
I think that the like Chicago's of and Jacksonville's of the world, as far as like how good of an offense are they going to be, I think that the Patriots can be right there. And a lot of it is just due to the fact that I believe in the quarterback and I believe in the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, ultimately, depending on where you lie on that pendulum, depending on where you lie on, is A.J. Brown still prime A.J. Brown, or is A.J. Brown maybe 85% of prime A.J. Brown? That's going to determine whether you're in or out on A.J. Brown at cost, but I think it's very undeniable. If he does work out, we are getting prime A.J. Brown. We're getting a quarterback that can threaten for an MVP in his third year. It's a worthwhile risk, man. You take Jahmyr Gibbs, you take Bijan Robinson, he falls to you at the end of the second round, totally fine making that pick. It really just depends, again, where he ends up going. If he's going above like Derrick Henry and Saquon Barkley and guys like that, I can't push him there, but I think he could be the head of the next tier.
Yeah, I mean, I got a five-time wide receiver one tethered to a second and MVP voting third-year quarterback. Yeah. Sometimes fantasy football is easy, is all I'll say about AJ Brown.
Yeah, valid. He's my 21st overall player, so I'm right in line where he goes.
Yeah, I have him at 19. I have him over Kenneth Walker, for example, which is not going to be a popular take. But let's talk about Nico, because Nico is another one of these guys, just like AJ, where I think people are going to overthink him. But again, I got a three-time wide receiver one in points per game here, who's still 27 years old. And I just did the Texans projections, and I was pleasantly surprised with what I came out of for CJ Stroud, setting a career high in passing yards, a career high in yards per attempt, career high in completion percentage, and a career high in touchdowns. And the reason I feel that way about CJ Stroud is, A, I like the offensive line additions over the last couple of years. I think that they're doing things to make the offensive line better. And I think the reason that CJ Stroud performed so poorly last year at times was the complete and utter lack of a run game. And I think David Montgomery will stabilize this offense around Nico Collins, who, again, from a ball knowledge standpoint, lines up at X receiver on the outside against your Sauce Gardeners and Patrick Surtains of the world every single week. And when you have Tank Dell coming back from injury, 19 months removed at the start of the season, he's going to be back on the field for training camp based on all reports. You have Jaden Higgins and Jalen Knoll going into year two. All that tells me is that Nico Collins has some help around him and has some ability to actually get some damn one-on-ones on the outside.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned it, because obviously I am the Nico guy of this channel. I absolutely love Nico Collins. I think if you're just taking real-life NFL wide receivers, he'd be much higher than when we're ranking him in fantasy, because ultimately, we've had the optimism that CJ Stroud would take that step. And unfortunately, since his rookie year, has only gone downhill, but there is upside. Year two with Kaylee, obviously you mentioned just the weapons core. You maybe get Tank Dell back, Jalen Noel, for example, or Jaden Higgins takes a step up. Dalton Schultz, a steady top 20-ish type of option at tight end. Again, he's not a world breaker, but if he's going to be your number four target in the offense, you absolutely take that. I do think, like you said, though, the number one most important thing is adding balance to this offense. If a team knows all you have to do is load up on Nico Collins and there's no other threat on that offense, no run game, no significant superstar talent at receiver, star talent at receiver to be able to take over the top, yeah, you can load up. You can play a guy press man on Nico. You can shade a safety over the top because you knew Nico's going to line up majority of his snaps at the X wide receiver outside position. But I do think with everything supporting him around, could we see more of a efficient, get back to the touchdown rate he was a couple years ago, and then all of a sudden, we're seeing Nico Collins be a legitimate top seven, top six overall receiver in fantasy. He's shown it before. Does he get back up to that level? I'm much more willing to take that risk at the 2-3 turn as opposed to the top 12 pick he was last year, because realistically, I think it's only better than what the case was last year, and he's gotten 8 to 10 picks cheaper.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like he's just as good as he was last year when he was a first-round pick, and if you look at the games that he underperformed in, look at the defensive coordinators that were able to keep him outside of a top 24 scoring week. Rams defensive coordinator, Todd Bowles in the Tampa Bay Bucks, Mike McDonald in the Seattle Seahawks, San Francisco 49ers. I believe he left early in that game for what it's worth. Then you also have the Buffalo Bills and Sean McDermott, Jesse Minter in week 17. Like, you have these like smart defensive coordinators that know how to play against the number one receiver. Some of those teams having, you know, physical shutdown number one corners as well. Like, to me, I just look at Nico Collins as exactly the same projection as last year, only basically a round cheaper.
Yeah, because we saw the 2 years prior, 17.5 points per game. It's like, we wanted more when he was at the 1-2 turn where it's like, okay, 17.5, we're more so going to need you to be at the 18.5, 19 plus range. But if you're getting 17.5 points per game from the 21st overall pick, paired next to a Bijan Robinson, a Jahmyr Gibbs, a Ja'Marr Chase, a Puka Nacua, he could be your second selected player. To me, that's far easier, because if you're getting 22 points per game from those elite top of the board first round talents, like, again, Bijan, Gibbs, and Chase specifically, Puka specifically, then at that point, it's like you just add Nico Collins' 17.5 and you're already off to a 40 point upstart compared to your competition.
I know. And as much as I don't want to start my draft, let's say Jahmyr Gibbs, AJ Brown, Nico Collins, because I'll be kind of behind the eight ball at running back, I might just not have a choice. Like, if Breece Hall and Kyren Williams are the top running backs on the board, like, and Bowers is gone and that kind of thing, it's just going to be hard to pass on these like hook, line, and sinker wide receiver one projections, in my opinion. So let's try and speed this up a little bit. Obviously, Rashee Rice, I would prefer him to AJ Brown and Nico Collins, assuming everything was hunky-dory and Mahomes would be healthy and he would have no issues. But there's at least, we're ranking these for best ball purposes as well right now. So there's also the factor that you have to play into the risk mitigation of taking too much Rashee Rice at this current moment in time. So for me, once we get cleared on certain things, I'll be fine taking Rashee Rice in the mid-second round. Just for now, I believe, where do I have him at the moment if I look at it? I'm pretty high on him. I'm at 23, and you and I are basically in lockstep, and nobody's really burying him too much because of what the upside he represents is, but you can't rank him much higher than where we have him at the same time.
Let me put you to the test, Corey. Can you tell me a tangible difference in tier if we had a healthy Rashee Rice versus Justin Jefferson?
No. I can't. And you know what? I'll do you one further. He should be the first Kansas City Chief off the board. He should be ahead of Kenneth Walker. I think he's a more significant fantasy asset than Kenneth Walker. On underdog, it's a three wide receiver start. And in home leagues that are full PPR, I think he represents a bigger advantage at wide receiver than Kenneth Walker does at running back. But that being said, structurally, I understand wanting to get the running back sooner. So I think it's actually a lot closer than people think, though.
But good thing the Bijan and Gibbs range get exposure to Rashee Rice because he's currently deflated in market cost.
Yeah.
Which, again, I mean, is valid. But like, also, like, it's not like I'm saying, oh, I have him at 15th overall, saying that I have him at 24. The risk. But guess what? You know what mitigates risk? When you have a 22 point per game hammer you're playing him with.
Imagine getting him, Bijan, and Neighbors on the same team and it working out positively. Like, imagine how insanely undervalued your two wide receiver one producers would be.
You win your league at the draft if they're healthy. Obviously, there's a ton of risk there. You can easily lose your league at the draft if that happens. But we're swinging to finish first. There's a reason why Sal went up there, a fifth overall, everybody expecting him to take Saquon Barkley. And he looked the camera dead in the face and said he wanted Christian McCaffrey.
You have to take some risk sometimes.
You have to take risk. And hey, guess what? If Rashee Rice ends up being an 18.5 point per game receiver, Patrick Mahomes is healthy in week one, like, he could be the risk you needed to take in the first three rounds of your draft.
Yeah, exactly. Neighbors, I'm a little bit more pessimistic on just because of the health of it. I'm not really that worried about Rashee Rice's health. I'm worried about Mahomes' health.
He was running away from cameras. You see him sprinting away from the cameras after he got released.
When I talked to him about, oh, is it a problem? He's not able to rehab. He's like, it's not an issue. He's able to get away from the facility that he was staying. He's already out of prison now. So it's like, whatever. Yeah. It's not that big of a deal. It's a non-story by the time. Yeah. Like, the reason I was hammering the crap out of him in best ball drafts, because he was falling to the 30s at times.
CLV.
And I'm like, exactly. It's a closing line value play at the very minimum, because I think he will be a mid-second round pick by the time we get to training camp and preseason. I don't expect Mahomes to be pacing like guaranteed timelines. I think it's possible we don't know until week one against the Broncos if Mahomes is healthy or not. But at the same time, like, Rice, even in that situation, will probably be a mid-second round pick.
Yeah, I'm on the same page with Rashee Rice. I do think he's got the most upside, where we do this video come August, he could legitimately be in the tier with Jefferson and London, if not maybe even heading it. So we'll see where it ends up happening on that trend line. We can talk about DeVonta Smith next. Again, we talked about one former Eagle. Now let's go to the current Eagle. The only concern here for me is the passing projection of this offense. I have zero concern about the talent level of DeVonta Smith taking over as the one.
Yeah, if we pull up the splits of DeVonta Smith without AJ Brown, it's pretty obvious when you look at, okay, when these two guys are not on the field together and Smith is operating as the alpha, it's night and day that he is one of the best receivers in the league. He can perform as a number one receiver. And I love the addition of Mekhi Lemon and Eli Stowers. I think they are very good complements to Devontae Smith, who without AJ Brown has produced at a 14.5 point per game clip. If you take out 2022, that first year of AJ Brown being there, when Devontae Smith was still just a second year wide receiver and not to the full capability of what he was, you can actually see it. I think it was a 17 point per game once it actually loads here. Okay, it's including 2023. It's just the last 2 years then. But either way, AJ Brown not being there opens up a lot of targets. And again, this is an offense that doesn't throw the ball a ton. So operating as the number one receiver is very, very helpful for Devontae Smith because he can actually get those 8.5, 29% target share type of looks. Him not scoring a lot of touchdowns and that kind of thing is the reason he doesn't have a higher point per game output from what I was pulling up here.
Well, I mean, I know it's only four games, but bro, 3.84 yards per out run. I was just loathing about how good Puka Nacua was at 3.78.
Yeah, like this is an insanely efficient receiver. And I'm of the opinion, and not everybody's maybe of this opinion, that Jalen Hurts might have a passing resurgence. That is the number I was looking for. It was 2024 in the two games that AJ Brown missed, Devontae Smith performing at a super, super high level. Extremely small sample size, of course. There is risk with Devontae Smith going this high in draft. He's not actually going, for what it's worth. He's a third round pick consistently in most leagues. I have him ranked inside of the second round, and I do believe that I might be one of the only ones too. And I am. I have him at 24. Yeah. He's my 24th overall player. I'm very comfortable taking him at the 2-3 turn. I would take him over, you know, your George Pickens, your Chris Olaves of the world, who some people would prefer. But I like number one receivers tethered to offenses that project to be what, ninth in the NFL in terms of Vegas projection right now. So, yeah, I think he can do it. I think he can be the guy. And I think Mekhi and Stowers and those guys are going to help the offense. And I think Manu is going to do wonders for Jalen Hurts' passing.
Yeah, no, I think that's reasonable, especially if you're on the more pro Eagle side of the passing pendulum there. I do think losing AJ Brown, even if he was disengaged last year, is going to be a risk. I love Mekhi Lemon, the prospect, but at the same time, I would take AJ Brown, the player, what we've seen in Philadelphia, over both Mekhi Lemon and Eli Sowers. I do think that is a significant loss. When we look at the overall projection, too, they are currently as the 13th ranked offense in Vegas projection. But it is a more of an increase from last year, because last year they were at 22.3 raw points per game. This year they're projected out at 23.81. So it is more bullish from a Vegas perspective that maybe they stabilize a little bit, maybe some better vibes.
Maybe Barkley will play a lot better this year too.
Repeat that, sorry?
I think Barkley plays a lot better this year. That helps the offense. I'm going to be more in the 25 to 26 points per game once I actually project them out, I would imagine. But yeah, I mean, yeah. I think both Devontae Smith and Saquon Barkley are slightly undervalued for what I'm projecting for Philadelphia. I understand being pessimistic on Hurts because, you know, it could go the Kyler Murray direction where they're looking for a new quarterback next year. I just don't think that's going to be likely with everything they have around him, a stable, good, well-coached team, good franchise, good front office. You know, they made some additions that I think are going to be significant. And I do like the addition by subtraction aspect of the locker room of losing AJ.
Hey, at the risk of being called the Cowboys homer, truthfully understand if you're getting rage baited by this, I am joking around. Who knows? Maybe the passing offense a little better off if they hand the reins to Tanner McKee.
Yeah, that is a rage bait and a half. That's like saying Trey Lance would be a better quarterback for you guys. Speaking of the Cowboys, let's talk about George Pickens, T. Higgins, Malik Nabers, Mecca Igbuka, Zay Flowers. Now, that's how this tier was constructed. Chris Olave, because he's lower for me. Because Chris Olave is lower for me right now because of the blood clots thing, I'm just kind of hedging my bets a little bit. Once he's cleared for training camp, which I expect him to be, I'm going to move him back up and he would be in this tier and maybe even close to the head of this tier. However, I'm going to comfortably just move him down a little bit just for now because it can be a very serious thing.
So for those at home wondering, the first three tiers we have exactly the same. The C tier, the only difference is I have Devontae Smith in the D tier. I have AJ Brown, Nico Collins, Rashee Rice in the C. Devontae Smith in the D tier. And my D tier would be George Pickens, Devontae Smith, Chris Olave, Malik Nabers, Zay Flowers, T. Higgins in that order. So it got jumbled a little bit when we were doing the consensus, but I am curious because Igbuka does show up for us here. So you must have him very aggressively ranked because he's at my wide receiver 22. So I'm shocked he jumped this far.
Yeah, so let's talk about Pickens and Higgins are very straightforward. Pickens and Higgins are number two receivers on some of the best passing projection offenses in football. And as you said, for Lamb, We are not of the opinion that Pickens probably repeats what he does this season unless Lamb misses time again. So Pickens and Higgins are both crystal clear 15-point-per-game projection receivers, because to be a 15-point-per-game projection receiver, you're probably somewhere between 1,200, 1,300 yards, 7 to 9 touchdowns, give or take. And that's what I expect for both of these players, given the situations that they're in.
So I'm curious. So if you also add Lamb here, because I'm curious what the site has in terms of the split between where people have Lamb versus where the people have Pickens. Because I do think the people that have Lamb lower in their overall rankings, like Zach, like Avery, like I wouldn't say Davis is lower, but relative to the field here, versus if you put up Pickens, they're probably at the top of the group for Pickens, I would assume.
Zach, Avery. So they think the split's a lot tighter than that. And I think when you factor in touchdown upside and stuff, maybe that's how they're getting there. They think that Pickens maybe has the 8 to 10 touchdowns, Lamb more the 6 to 8 touchdowns or whatever. But I share your opinion, which is that Lamb, when he's healthy, is going to be more the 17 to 19 point-per-game receiver, clear number one, 1,408 versus Pickens more the 1,207 type number.
Yeah, and again, that's not really an indictment on Pickens. It's just acknowledging the fact that last year went Pickens' way. I do think it's going to bounce back towards CeeDee Lamb, because if you asked me going into last year how I would rank the receivers, I'd probably have CeeDee Lamb as like the fourth or fifth best receiver in the league, and I would have had George Pickens more so in the 15 to 20 range, 20 to 25 range. Obviously, with the breakout year for Pickens, like Pickens is probably closer to the top 10 to 12 guy, and maybe you have like JSN and Puka above Lamb now, so he's like 6 for you, but I still do think if you had to rank out the top 20, top 25 receivers in the league, most lists should have CeeDee Lamb above George Pickens. There's going to be people out there that are like, oh, I love what George Pickens did last year more than Lamb. But it's like, you can't just forget that the guy had almost 1,812.
Yeah. What does the team think of these two guys is the important part. And the team knows that Lamb is the guy. And 15.2 points per game in the games with Lamb. That's almost exactly what I would expect from George Pickens right now. So the fact that he had 26.3 points per game in the game, and this is including games that Lamb played in but left early against the Bears, for example, like you said, George Pickens had, 17.5 fantasy points in that game with Lamb leaving early as well. So yeah, the Green Bay game, the Carolina game, those were his big performances, and Lamb was not in the lineup for those.
Yeah, exactly. I'm on the same page with you here. Very solid click if you're getting it, the early to mid third round, but not one that I'm clicking and expecting he's going to produce what he did last year.
And T is the exact same situation. Only here's the thing with T that I really love, because T goes lower than Pickens. We have never, ever seen Ja'Marr Chase miss time with T healthy and Burrow healthy. So there is the upside that T can be this year's Pickens, where Chase misses 4 games with a hamstring pull and Higgins has a 19-20 point per game season, because in those games that Chase was out, he's averaging 25 points per game like Pickens was doing without Lamb. So we've seen Higgins already be a top 12 receiver twice. We know that the passing projection for the Bengals is absolutely elite. Like I said, 4,939. That's the passing yardage and passing touchdowns I have on Joe Burrow this year. I believe he is going to be the MVP of the NFL this year. That is my prediction of who would be MVP at the quarterback position. So for me, T. Higgins is discount George Pickens this year, because I think they're almost exactly the same projection, only Higgins goes 8 to 10 picks later.
Yeah, I think that is reasonable. The way I kind of look at it is, we've talked about this on stream a couple of times. We've talked about this with, some of the YouTube chat, but if I look at Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, I think Lamb's slightly worse than Ja'Marr Chase, and George Pickens is slightly better than T. Higgins. So the way I have the gaps is, I have Ja'Marr Chase at 3, and I have T. Higgins more so at like the 33 to 35 range, I believe, in my rank.
36, yeah. And me and Sammy are, 29 and 28 respectively. We're right there with where we have Pickens essentially.
Yeah, versus with Lamb and Pickens, I have them, I believe, 6 and 26, I want to say.
Yeah, again, I believe T. Higgins is just as good as George. So that's why I'm like kind of on the same page with Sammy there. He's probably of the same opinion. But let's rattle through these last couple again. Malik, if healthy,
he'd be in the Jefferson London tier.
He's going to start on the pup. This is my expectation of Malik Nabers, because if he wasn't going to start on the pup, and I thought there was a good chance he'd be ready for week one, he'd be right there with AJ and those guys in that tier. And if he definitely was going to start in week one, he'd be right
above
Jefferson and Lamb and London probably.
Yeah, he'd probably be wide receiver 6 for me if he was fully healthy entering week one.
Yeah, and I just don't think he will be. Based on my conversation with James and everything that we know about ACL injuries and cleanup procedures generally, according to James, I'm quoting him here, delay your timeline by about a month. So he was already playing fast and loose with the timeline surgery to week one. Now, after the cleanup procedure, it's probably going to delay his timeline to make him start on the pop. He's still a good receiver, but if you're drafting him in underdog drafts, you got to draft eight receivers and draft safer receivers. You got to draft, you know, extra quarterbacks and tight ends to help you advance those teams. If you're drafting him in a redraft league, you better be drafting with a bunch of tacos and an ESPN two wide receiver, one flex, to the point that you can take guys in the eighth, ninth round that can help you get through the first 6 to 8 games that you're not going to either have Malik Nabers period or have Malik Nabers playing at his highest levels.
So let's be perfectly clear to people as well. You see that 31.5 ADP. Obviously, we have him ranked by underdog standards, but I still have him lower than the overall ADP. I have him ranked as my 34th overall player because ultimately, especially for those of you that are in more standard redraft leagues, when you're an underdog, all that matters realistically is if you get to week 14, 15, 16, 17, having the guy that can literally win you the week. And Malik Nabers has shown in his career that he can win you the week. If you're in more of a standard redraft league where every week freaking matters, winning or losing your matchup.
Probably an early fourth round player.
I would even go further. He might be closer to like a mid fourth, 4 or 5 turn. Cause it's like, you know, inherently, if you're making that click, you're probably not going to be getting at least 80%+ Malik Nabers until week 4 or week 5.
I think it'll be later than that, man.
That's what I mean. It could be week 7, week 8, week 9.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like if he misses the first 4 to 6 games on pup, like the pup is 6 games, is it not? Or is it 4?
4.
4. Okay. 4. So if he starts on pup and he misses the first 4 games, he won't be 80%+ of the routes, in my opinion, until at least week 6. And that's if everything goes right from here on out. So yeah. that's the timeline you're playing with here. So the reason I have him higher actually than he goes on underdog is because I can draft a 3 quarterback build. I can draft a 3 tight end build, help my advance rate. Right, I can draft 8 receivers, take Wandale Robinson, Jacoby Myers types to help me advance Malik Nabers. In a redraft league, like unless you have an IR spot, 2 wide receiver, 1 flex, and you're playing with your college idiot buddies who have no idea how to win fantasy, in the flock league, like where people know what they're doing, I'm curious to see where he goes, if he's going to start on pop.
I am very curious if he falls to round 5. That's going to be my prediction.
Like, when there's that much money on the line and that much at stake and everybody knows how to win fantasy leagues, like you're basically making sure that you have to hit on your round 8 to 12 picks so that you can advance Malik Nabers and make the playoffs in that league.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm on the same page with Malik Nabers. It's all a risk tolerance thing. Have him as my wide receiver 14, but realistically, if you told me that we are guaranteed to get the pup, we are guaranteed to get setbacks, which probably is about, you know, an 85-90% likelihood, but it just hasn't been announced yet, I wouldn't even be shocked if his ADP fell closer to like the 38, 39, 40 range.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's exactly where I'm at with it too. So I'm going to do something here, Danny. Let's cut off the conversation here. Let's cut off the conversation here. We will talk about Emeka Egbuka and Zay Flowers in the next video, which is wide receiver 15 in our consensus rankings. Yep. Through wide receiver 30 or 36 or however many we get through. But the reason I wanted to cut it off here is because I am of the opinion mainly that Emeka Egbuka should be this high. I am probably mainly of the opinion that Zay Flowers should be this high. I want it to be more so our consensus, and you have Olave and some of these other guys a little bit higher than I do. So I do think they belong in the next conversation because I don't really realistically think that both of us came to a consensus on Egbuka and Flowers being this high.
Well, so Flowers I have right on the same page here. I have him at 15. So
okay.
I'm with
you.
You
want to talk about Flowers and then save Egbuka for the next video then?
Let's do that then, because we could talk about Flowers. Egbuka was a weird one with the consensus because I actually do have him 2 tiers lower than this.
Okay. So let's talk about Zay then, because in both of our rankings combined, yeah, you have him at 35, I am at 37. So he is kind of more so in this territory. Yeah. With Zay Flowers, you had a guy last year, 29.1% target share, top 13 overall finish in points per game, top 7 finish overall on the season. That was with a lot of things going wrong. He only scored 5 touchdowns. A couple of those got called back due to penalties and that kind of thing. I remember specifically the one that screwed me out of my flock league playoff spot. He had fumbles. He had bullshit happen. But 1,200 yards as a third-year receiver is insanely impressive when you factor in that Lamar wasn't himself, came in and out of games, missed some games last year. We get Lamar Jackson of old, and Zay Flowers' season goes from 1,205 to 1,408. And that's a wide receiver 1, top 17 point per game type of finish.
So I think Zay Flowers is one of the most interesting clicks on the board and a guy that I'm going to be taking a ton of, especially if his ADP is going to stay at this range. Because when I tell you this, Corey, the Ravens right now by Vegas projection, number 6 ranked offense in the league, over 25 projected points per game, 25.47. Lamar Jackson, currently the quarterback 2 in fantasy off the board. Clearly everybody is bullish about this Ravens offense. look at the receiving weapons. I mean, overall offensive weapons, period. The only real main competition for pure touches would be Derrick Henry, who's an aging running back.
And then two rookie receivers who Elijah Surratt and Jacoby Lane I like, but they are third and fourth round receivers that they took.
Rashad Bateman, is he ever going to take a step and be a 1,000-yard receiver? I would tend to think no.
I think he won't be even a starting top three receiver by midseason.
But that's my entire point. It's like when you look at the overall offense and you say, okay, who are the main focal points of this offense? It's Derrick Henry. It's Zay Flowers.
And then in the red zone, it's Mark Andrews, but probably between the 20s, those days are beyond his.
That's a projection too. Like, yeah, like is Mark Andrews even 50% of the player he was when he was, you know, the consistent 850 and 12 touchdown guy?
Yeah, he's not.
He looked like a shell of himself.
Yeah.
So when I'm looking at this offense, you got Declan Doyle coming in, who's going to put more of an emphasis on the short passing game. And I would say that's the one thing that Zay Flowers realistically been missing, because he's been a guy that can affect down the field. He's a guy who can create these big plays. But what was his number one strength we had for him coming out of college?
Yards after catch play.
And Declan Doyle coming from the Lions lineage, working under Ben Johnson, who famously has
the Amon-Ra guys. We do the who's going to be his Amon-Ra? What if Zay Flowers is his Amon-Ra? Because yeah, Zay Flowers, by reception perception data, by PFF receiving grade, yards per out run, he's every bit as good of a receiver as those types of players. Like,
he checks every box.
It just because he gets only screen passes and downfield shots last year doesn't mean he can't run a 13-yard dig route for a first round for a first down. He can do it. His reception perception data has been pristine for 3 years.
So, Corey, it's crazy that I'm in the spot now making this prediction, because you've always been the Zay Flowers guy, and I've, you know, joked around like Josh Downs outscored him a couple years ago, which, by the way, was a fact. I'm willing to say, given the new shape of where I think this offense is going to be directed, with my faith in Declan Doyle, with my faith in the overall projection of this Ravens offense, what if it's this year's JSN?
Yeah, I think it's possible. He's entering a contract year just like JSN was. And also, too,
same class.
The oldest brain trust of head coach offensive coordinator Jim Harbaugh and John Harbaugh, and Todd Monken last year combined 123 years old. Jesse Minter and Declan Doyle combined 73 years old between the two of them. Declan Doyle's the youngest offensive coordinator in football, and their first course of action was to let their top two tight ends behind Mark Andrews walk in free agency and draft two receivers in the first four rounds.
We might have Zay Flowers too low.
We might, and we have him some of the higher ones on the side. I guess I'm more so in the middle of the pack here with the 37 overall, but I have the Ravens projected for 514 pass attempts. It would be their highest total in the Lamar Jackson era. Since that 1 year, sorry, where Mark Andrews had that monster year in 2021. Since that year, they haven't exceeded 500 pass attempts.
Yeah, I see it. And I also noticed with Zay Flowers, he had 1,200 plus yards, six touchdowns, 27% target share. It's like you get, you know, a random spike. We always famously have joked this guy hasn't been the touchdown scorer, but maybe all he needed was Declan Doyle to unlock that.
Like, yeah, like what if that? Right? What if the whole Mark Andrews, Charlie Kolar, Isaiah Likely, and Derrick Henry in the red zone plan was all Todd Monken and John Harbaugh, which based on what we're hearing in New York right now about, oh, it's going to be a run heavy offense, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. It probably was John Harbaugh, who was the CEO of that Ravens team.
Yeah. Like when we look at the first 2 years as the reason why I was saying, oh, maybe Zay Flowers has a limited ceiling, but objectively speaking, year three, you look at the target share, you look at the yards per out run, you look at the overall yardage, you look at the finish in fantasy in 17 games. It's like, he evidently took that third year leap, and we don't know what year four could be in store.
Yeah, and that was exactly my point when he was a top five breakout candidate for me last year, is that he's been so good to this point in his career. Who's to say he doesn't take a step? And we didn't get the Lamar Jackson of 2024, but if we did, Flowers would have had 1,400 yards.
That's another very key point, is he did all that, 1,200 yards, five touchdowns, that type of yards per out run, that type of target share, with Lamar Jackson dealing with all of the bullshit.
If we get MVP level Lamar per game output, lowest rushing attempts per game output of his career, one of his worst seasons by far of his career, Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, maybe I'm talking myself into having Zay Flowers close to the head of this tier. Who knows? We'll see where it ends up going.
Yeah, this is like these are the 15 point per game projection receivers for me, and Malik Nabers, who's obviously better than that, but we don't know how healthy he's going to be. So yeah, that's the top 15 or so receiver rankings that we're going to get through. Obviously, on Wednesday, we're going to go through kind of the 16 through 30, which is more your mid-round receivers, your 13, 14, maybe 15 plus point per game upside, but the floor is lower type of projections there. So yeah, stay tuned for that. We're going to have some other videos this week. We'll do some more underdog drafts, some more team reviews. Make sure you guys are subscribed down below. Like the video if you enjoyed this. Let us know you like this format of us going really in-depth on the top rankings. We'll, of course, by August and whatnot, do rankings tier lists that are a little bit more succinct, a little bit more players covered in one video. But because this is like our initial redraft best ball stuff, like you can hear us literally the gears are turning throughout the video of stuff that we're changing our opinions on talking through. So we literally moved JSN down mid-video in this one. So there's something to be said for doing these initial rankings in this in-depth format. And hopefully you guys are enjoying it. Hopefully you made it to the end. Get the season pass if you guys want early access. It's the same exact price as it was last year, but you get it for a month and a half, 2 months longer. I am recovering from a bachelor party this weekend that has my liver in knots. But definitely check that out. Check out the best ball tool as well. Go draft some of these players on Underdog. Go get your early discounts on certain guys. And make sure you guys are stay tuned to everything we have going for the rest of the summer. Everything I mentioned will be down below in the pinned comment. Like, subscribe, peace out, and we'll talk to you soon.